The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov. Some interesting things that I was reading about, especially with the Palestinian Islamic Jihad leader Bassam El-Saadi, mm-hmm. who we know was arrested last week, remains in detention in an Israeli jail. And we understand from at least the powers that be that his arrest was really the trigger that precipitated the operation over the weekend, Operation Breaking Dawn. We now understand that a United Nations team has visited Bassam al-Assad in the Ofer prison. And it's just, you know, obviously notable that Israel gives immediate access to the United Nations to visit prisoners. Not only the United Nations, but indeed members of their families have access to visit them. And, you know, it goes without saying that we compare that to the situation of Israeli prisoners who have been held in Gaza. And obviously it's not of the same standard whatsoever, but we understand that a UN team has been to visit him in prison. The United Nations Special Coordinator for the Middle East process has said that the Gaza ceasefire is very fragile, and he's calling on all sides to preserve the calm. And we sort of interpret that to mean to call upon the Israelis to effectively release him, because that was at least what Palestinian Islamic Jihad have said was part of the ceasefire agreement, is that he would be released. He's not been released up until now. The UN have had access to visit him. His situation is reported to have deteriorated recently. I don't exactly know what that means in terms of how well or unwell he is, but there was a report that his situation had deteriorated, but at least the United Nations does have access to him. And just on an entirely different story, Howard, and I wanted to also perhaps involve the listeners in getting some of their views, but there's been some controversy around the number of foreign students who are allowed to study medicine at Israeli medical institutions. This is something that's been the case, being allowed already for many, many years. And now recently, the Council for Higher Education in Israel has decided to put an end to allowing particularly Canadian and American students to come to study medicine in Israel. Obviously, the Canadians and the Americans are by far the largest number of foreign students who come to study medicine or indeed anything else at Israeli institutions. But medicine has been a particular focus because it is so difficult for Israeli students to be accepted to medical facilities. And so the Council of Higher Education has said, we think we're going to need to put an end to the foreign students studying here in order to make more places available for Israeli students. And at the moment, it might surprise people to know that there are 900 places available for Israeli students at medical institutions in Israel each year. There was a plan, there is a plan to try to increase that from 900 to 1,200. At the moment, Israelis who are unable to get accepted to medical faculties, and there are many of them, traditionally go to Europe to study medicine, to go to Hungary, to Italy, to Romania, to Germany, to the Netherlands, many, many Israeli students who go there and, of course, have to pay the relevant fees as foreign students to go and study medicine at those institutions. And unfortunately, a lot of them don't come back.
I was just going to say, it'll be interesting to find out how many of them actually return to Israel.
Many of them don't come back, which is a great loss to Israel. And of course, there's a cost involved. And of course, there is the issue of the fact that the Israeli medical faculties are so well respected, so sought after, and yet our own students are having to go and study medicine abroad. It seems somewhat ironic. Of course, the fact that foreign students do come to study here means it's a great advert for Israeli science, for Israeli medicine. Many of them go to take up senior positions elsewhere in their home countries, and it's a great two-way communication. Nice for Jewish students to be able to come here and study medicine. It's a nice link between Israel and the diaspora Jewry, not only Jewish students, but indeed the scientific community in general. What do listeners think about this dilemma that Israel is facing on the study of medicine in Israel?
I would imagine that there needs to be a balance because both are important. It is important for foreign students to come to Israel to be able to, on some level, have the opportunity to study there and continue their life there, assuming that that's what they want to do. But I would imagine that it needs to be fair and Israelis need to be prioritized. It's their country. It's where they've grown up.
Right.
It's their education system. Presuming their parents have been paying taxes, and you know, to get to them to that point, I think that certainly I would believe that they need to be prioritized. But
the question is, where does one create the balance?
Yes.
You know, where is the right balance? And of course, everybody has a different view.
Right.
And just before we get into the other important and very, very serious stuff, I don't know how many of the listeners follow TikTok are on the TikTok social media site, but there's this great video that's gone viral on TikTok, which shows a dance-off between Palestinian children and an Israeli soldier in the area of Jenin.
Oh,
and
wow.
The soldier writes that he was on duty near Jenin when he noticed Palestinian kids in the distance, and they started to dance. And so he decided to respond, and he danced back. And so there was a dance-off between those children who are in the field a little bit further away, and this 21-year-old Israeli reservist who is actually an immigrant from France, and they videoed the dance off, and it's gone viral on TikTok. Those of you on TikTok, go for it. Have a look at it. It's
that
great.
Is too wonderful.
Imagine the dance off.
Yeah, imagine if the conflict could be resolved that way. That would be that would be incredible. Yair says, I think it should be accepted. People should be accepted based on merit. And Anton L. saying, how many foreigners stay in Israel after they've studied? I think that's also as important a question, you know, to be able to look at that. Are they coming to Israel studying and then staying, or are they going back to other parts of the world? Not to say,
I think it's a mix.
But there's value in that also. There is value in somebody going out to the rest of the world having studied in Israel. So I think both are very interesting and very important. The results of the primaries that have been held so far show some interesting outcomes. So what are the trends? What are we seeing?
Well, the Likud primary was held yesterday. We don't yet have the final results of the primary, but one of the things that has become quite obvious from the exit polls, which have been conducted of those people who participated in the primary. And by the way, the primaries are open to paid up members of the party. So in the case of the Likud primary, if you are a member of Likud paid up and on the list, then you would be entitled to vote in that primary. And the vote counting goes on this morning still, so we don't yet know the final results, but we do have a very, very good indication of what we're expecting to see coming out of that primary. And what we're expecting to see is massive support for the Likud leader, Benjamin Netanyahu. Of course, he was not one of the candidates in the primary. He will automatically get the first seat on the list. The first name on the list will be his without needing to get any votes. So he didn't participate himself, but massive support for those people who are close to him. And that's how this is being measured. For example, Yuli Edelstein, who was a former speaker of the Knesset and then came out very much against Netanyahu and even challenged him for leadership of the Likud. Apparently, Yuli Edelstein will come nowhere in this particular primary, according to the results of the exit polls, that he will not even get a seat in the Knesset on the basis of what the level of support that he's received. And he's a good example of how the Likud are really rallying behind Netanyahu, supporting him, supporting those people who are close to him, supporting those people that he has come out publicly supporting and showing that they are people that he feels are close to his inner circle. They are the people who are getting the support. That's from the Likud. From the Labour, it was a completely contrary view. New guard coming in. Now, of course, Labour haven't been particularly successful in recent Knesset elections, but it's been noticeable to see that the new guard have come in, and that, in fact, when we look at the Labour list that's been drawn up, which comes out of the results of the primaries, some of those names at the top of the list are hardly even known in Israeli general politics in the public domain. Obviously, they're people who are quite well known within the Labour Party itself, but beyond the Labour Party, they seem not to be so well known. So we're seeing some quite different trends coming out from different spaces. And it was just fascinating to see how yesterday everything was about the leader of the Likud, Netanyahu, and his support, and the fact that the Likud believe that he is the ticket to get back into power. The more they support him, the more likely the Likud seem to be able to return to government. Very, very fascinating indeed.
It really is, but and I just wonder how things will change as it gets closer, but really interesting developments here. The questions are being asked about whether Prime Minister Yair Lapid acted within the law when he launched Operation Breaking Dawn. What might have not been illegal about his actions?
So the big question surrounds whether or not he ought to have received a decision, a positive decision from Israel's security cabinet before launching the operation. Did he need the approval of the security cabinet in order to launch that operation? Now, it turns out that the decision to launch the operation was taken by Prime Minister Yair Lapid together with Defense Minister Benny Gantz. They were the two who were really leading all of this. And to be fair, they've come out in the public domain with very, very positive ratings from the way in which they led this particular campaign from the front, the way that they were quite public during the campaign, and of course the way in which the campaign itself went, and in particular how short it was, because I think people like the fact that it was over and done very, very quickly indeed. But we understand that they did ask for legal approval from Israel's Attorney General, Gali Baharav Miara. She is the Attorney General, and she was consulted in terms of whether it would be legal for the two of them to take the decision on their own. Clearly, the cabinet had been kept updated about events that were going on in the background. There were calls that were held, and there was updating, but no formal approval was received from the security cabinet. And the Attorney General said that as far as she's concerned, they were allowed to go ahead and launch the operation without the approval of the security cabinet. And the reason that she said that was because she said that the defense establishment had determined that the launch of this campaign would not break out, would not lead to a wider war, would not lead to a wider operation, that was fairly limited, that was quite limited in its intentions and potentially how much implication it could have, wider implications. So she said that because it wasn't going to lead to a much broader war, and this was on the basis of the advice that she'd been given by the security establishment, she decided that it was okay for Lapid and Gantz by themselves to launch this operation and not to get the view, not to get the approval of the security cabinet, and that if for any reason she felt that the security establishment hadn't assessed things correctly or that it could potentially lead to a wide operation, she wouldn't have given the same legal advice, which is quite interesting because I don't know exactly how she decided that this wasn't going to be something wider than it was ultimately. But now events show that she actually was right.
Surely that could have gone either way.
I think it could have gone either way. And so there is a big question as to whether, you know, she formed a view on the basis of something that was really proper, you know, a sound basis, or whether there was some guesswork that went on, or whether she was just relying on the views that were being expressed. But whether people really had control over this, I don't know. But it's a very fascinating view that she's given, rather than just saying they have the legal authority to do this and end of story. She's decided to go a little bit further in the public and say, because of the fact that she was advised and she believed that it wasn't going to lead to a wider campaign, she thought that it was okay for the two of them to decide by themselves.
Really, really interesting, because it really did took a massive chance on that, because it really, unless their intel was so powerful that they knew. But
wow, I don't know.
But you've got to have a lot of confidence for that one.
You do. And of course, one has to bear in mind that when we go into these campaigns, it's not just only about launching the campaign. It's not only about the possible loss of life. But it's also about putting the country onto some sort of an operational footing. There was authorization to call up reserve soldiers, not only cost, but also disruption to everyday life in Israel. There are some wide implications involved when we go into operations like this. So these are decisions that need to be taken, you know, with all of that in mind.
Yeah, it's just truly, really, really remarkable. So tomorrow is Tu B'Av. It starts tonight, and it is a very, very special day in the Jewish calendar. Tell us about it.
Well, it is a special day in the Jewish calendar. First of all, for this time around only, Tu B'Av and Tisha B'Av actually fall almost in the same week, with Tisha B'Av having been marked on Sunday and now Tu B'Av on Friday. And Tu B'Av, the name Tu B'Av, actually means the 15th of Av. Two are the letters in the Hebrew alphabet which signal the number 15, using the letters that we often use in order to draw up numbers, in order to signal numbers. So 2 is 15, and Av, of course, is the month, the Hebrew month of Av, the 15th day of Av. This is a holiday that actually goes back to the days of the temple. And apparently, during the days of the temple, Tu B'Av was the day upon which the grape harvest began. And it was traditional for the unmarried girls of Jerusalem to dress up in their white garments and to go out to the vineyards and to dance. And I'm not quite sure where they would have done that, whether they went to dance in the vineyards because they knew that the boys would be in the vineyards picking the grapes, or whether there was some other reason why the unmarried girls of Jerusalem would do that. But according to the Mishnah, apparently, Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur were the happiest days for the Jews in the calendar. There were no holy days as happy for the Jews as Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur. This is actually a quote from the Talmud, but this is also Mishnaic, and so this goes back a long way, and it just gives us another opportunity to have a day of love, and I think that we should grab those opportunities with both hands. So in Israel, of course, it has become a little commercialized, and not unlike Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day is a day that's also marked here to some degree, but of course Tu B'Av as well. So for those people who are looking for an opportunity to express their love, tomorrow is the chance, starting tonight already, of course, and nothing is off limits. Please go ahead and go wild. Do whatever you think you could do in order to mark your love. And just remember that this is a day that really goes back to the days of the temple, which I think is quite remarkable.
It really is. And as you say, it's a great, great time to just show a little bit of love. Goodness knows we all need that. It is about to go at 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Wishing you a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll catch you at 7:45 on Monday.